Those were the events for Easter. Those were the events that Peter held on to. May we bow our heads in prayer. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, for you are our strength and our Redeemer. All mine. All mine. All mine. All mine. I want Jesus alive. I want him risen. I want you to know it. I want to impress this upon you. As James says, get a new mind. Get a new mind. Now, I'm going to ask a fun question, though. When did you last get a new mind? It's a bit of a trick question. How long have some of you been married? Did you not acquire a new mind when you got married? Okay, all the men, raise your hands. Did you not acquire a new mind? Whether you were single, whether you were divorced, whether you were separated, whether you're a widow, whether you're married, there is a love story within you that changed the world for you. There is a love story that changed everything for you. And my prayer is that that would be rekindled in you. It just so happens I acquired a new mind 45 years ago this day. And I have photos to show it and prove it. We recall the events of Jesus' trial, crucifixion, his death and burial, and even his resurrection. I want you to hold all those things in your mind. There was the trial, the crucifixion, death, burial, and then we've been talking about the resurrection. And we have this person named Peter, who's brash, impulsive, impetuous, a fisherman, a wannabe disciple. I want to be the best disciple. Well, he was part of that inner group with James and John. But he's also a broken man. You see, he betrayed Jesus, the one he loved. He had promised that he would go to prison and he would even die for Jesus. And now events have unfolded with Jesus' resurrection. And then Jesus appears to women. I think there's a hierarchy here, guys. Then he appears to two people on the road to Emmaus. Then he appears in a closed room. Then he comes back a week later and appears to Thomas in another closed room. But not once has he spoken directly to Peter. Now, how do you feel in that situation? You're part of the inner circle. You have this assurance that you're going to be a great disciple, and yeah, you swung a sword, but maybe that wasn't appropriate. But he hasn't spoken to you since the resurrection. Now, Jesus had told them through an angel that he would appear to them, disciples, again in Galilee. So Peter heads off to go fishing, to the place where it all began. In a kind of numbness, he wills himself to go fishing. He really doesn't know what to do with his resurrection. It is exciting. It is joyful. Sort of. It's scary. But he hasn't spoken to me. Jesus hasn't talked to me. So they go off fishing. This great fisherman, how does he do? He can't catch fish anymore. And then there's the stranger on the beach who suggests that they throw their nets on the other side of the boat, and suddenly the nets are full of fish bursting. And then John says, "Hey, that's Jesus on the beach." John recognizes the person on the beach and speaks the trigger words that sends Peter over the side. I love that. Says these words, and Peter's over the side. Peter can't hold himself back anymore. He leaps out of the boat and swims to the shore. There's so much unfinished business between him and Jesus, and he needs to deal with it in person. Does this kind of get close to anybody here? His failure to stay with Jesus and his broken promises were aching in his heart. This brokenness had brought Peter to the point where he needed to lay out his failure before the master, before Jesus, before the rabbi. That's why he needed to jump out of the boat. Now, if you were Jesus and Peter came running up to you, what are you going to say? This is what Jesus is going to say. "Simon Peter, you said you were better than the others, but look what you did. You said you'd stick with me even to death, but look what you did. You thought you were better than even me. You tried to scold me, didn't you? You didn't deny me once. You didn't deny me twice. You did it three times. And then with some cursing and some things in the Bible which aren't written. Peter, what kind of a disciple are you?" But instead of an angry tirade, Jesus asks Peter only one question. The essential question. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" The one question that penetrates Peter's heart, penetrates his self-loathing, penetrates his feeling of inadequacy, and goes to the depths of Peter's very being. This time, he doesn't answer with brash boasts and vain comparisons with other disciples, or the old self-confidence and assertiveness that's all drained away. Humbled by his failure, and more sorry than he's ever felt before, and with the love that was coming from Jesus, what does Peter say? "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And that's all that Jesus needs to know. The same question is being asked of you by Jesus Christ. "Do you love me?" He didn't say, "Are you going to church? Are you on a search committee? Are you giving to the poor? Are you making soup?" No. He asks, "Do you love me?" It's a simple question. Now, a true lover never forces itself. If you're willing to receive the question and respond to it honestly and faithfully, we find ourselves changed. When true love touches us, it makes a big difference. It makes a huge difference. It's rocked my life. When I asked her before the proposal, it was early on, "Are you my girl?" I was a jock at Simon Fraser University. Words were not a big thing. Are you my girl? And she says, uh-huh. Wow! That changed everything. When we love somebody, our personalities and priorities are changed. The way we live is changed. I have to confess that when I married Sherry, I knew very little about fine art. But nevertheless, Sherry loved me, coached me, encouraged me, to the point where I now have an honest interest in fine art. But I must confess that pre-Sherry days, I would never be caught dead in an art gallery or the crafty section of a farmer's market or going off to a craft show in Cherryville or stopping into a hippie joint in the cusp. Or, this was cool though, they had knives and spears. And Masai Mara Market in Nairobi. Now that was cool, I liked that. Or, yeah, it was kind of cool stopping at roadside kiosks in Uganda, and I'm sure you guys have done the same. But because I married Sherry, I know whom Vincent van Gogh is. I knew who Marc Chagall is. I know who Claude Monet is. I'll never forget a particular trip we had in England. And we'd only been married about 4 or 5 years. Less than that, I think it was 3 years. And we were going through another gallery. This time it was in a castle, so that's kind of cool. And after we wander around, I tell her that the only thing that impressed me was these two or three paintings, and this one in particular, and she said, good, it's a Van Dyck, one of the old masters. She had taught me enough to recognize the true art. When we love someone, we allow that relationship to shape us. When we love someone, we allow that relationship to shape us. Now, Tony Campolo, an author of which I have quoted many times in many sermons, had the privilege of meeting a number of times and hearing him preach and teach, makes a profound and thought-provoking statement when he says, love God and do as you please. You see, if we allow the love of God to shape us and transform us, then what pleases God will begin to be what pleases us. If we allow God to shape and transform us, then what pleases God will begin to be what pleases us. And in a marriage, in a friendship, even in a business relationship, when you appreciate, care for the person, what they like, you begin to like. An ever-growing love for Jesus gives us an ever clearer vision of what we are to love in our world. Peter's love relationship with Jesus transformed him from a person who was preoccupied with himself, with his abilities and his accomplishments, to one who was absolutely absorbed by his relationship with Jesus. He was to be transformed from a brash, impulsive, impetuous man to a wise, solid rock on which the early church was built. He was to be transformed from the one who was fearful to follow Jesus to the one who fearlessly followed him to his own death as a martyr. Love for Jesus was transformative for Peter. Love for Jesus was to make it possible for Peter to respond to Jesus' commission, feed my lambs, and take care of my sheep. And it's wonderful to watch the little lambs out the door here. I'm watching these little children. Peter recovered from this great denial of Jesus and became the most prominent leader of the early church in Jerusalem. He preached the first great public message about Jesus on the day of Pentecost. Following Jesus was not going to be easy for Peter. There would be struggles, imprisonment, and even betrayal that would lead to his personal crucifixion. Jesus said, "Do you love me?" And Peter responded by saying, "Yes, Lord, you know that I do." Now, Jesus had originally called Peter from fishing. He said, "Follow me." And Peter became a fisher of men and women and never looked back. The Bible says the first and greatest commandment is this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and all your mind. There can be no other love in your life equal to the love we have for God. I'm sorry to say this. Sherry, I love Jesus the most. Not even my love of church might not leave my career, not my love of my country is anywhere close to my love of Jesus. Now, we can't create or manufacture our love of God. Our love for God can only be a response to His love. And this is how God showed His love among us. He sent His only Son into the world so that we might live through Him. The love of Jesus Christ is not a ticket to avoid something. It's not a free pass into heaven. We are called to live in the kingdom of God now and for eternity. This is how God showed His love. He sent His one and only Son into the world, and we know what happened there, so that we might live through Him. This is the kind of love we are talking about. Not that we once upon a time love God. No. But God loved us and sent His Son as a sacrifice to clear away all the junk that has kept us away from having a relationship with God. Now, when we take up permanent residence in a life with Christ, we live in God and God lives in us. When we take up permanent residence in a life with Christ, we live in God and God lives in us. The seven principles making your marriage work. Professor at the University of Washington, John Gottman, is recognized as the number one guru on marriage in North America. I've been trying to go down and take the classes to be able to teach this. My son Michael went, and another ministry friend of mine, Kim Munro, went, and they're offering classes in this. I hope this November I get to go. You know what was so startling about when I read this book? It was everything Sherry taught me. And I'm still learning. By the grace of God, I had ears that could actually hear her. How many of you remember Gary Smalley? Hidden Keys for Loving Relationships? His story was, they've got the manual. Guys, we got to read it. Well, here's a book that talks about knowing your partner so intimately that you know their likes, dislikes, what's happening in their life, what's their career like. It's a series of of questions so that you get to know each other. You live for each other. Tony Campolo said that you have only one argument as a married couple, one argument, and that he's in Philadelphia and he's prepared to arbitrate it. He says, if I have a career that is flourishing, Sherry has an opportunity to go off to art school, and I say, I'm giving up my career, you go to art school, and she says, no, I'll give up art school so you can have the career. If you are giving in to each other, because the reality is every other argument is power. So when you're giving up the power to the other, and you're both doing it mutually, he says, call him. He'll arbitrate it. And I'll do the same. This is the other manual. Talks about a relationship with God. Talks about nothing but a relationship with God. Sociologist with a Jewish background wrote this. It's very good. Somebody with a Jewish background wrote this. It talks about intimacy. It talks about a relationship where you sacrifice and turn yourself over to the other. And this is what Peter did when he jumped out of the boat and he ran to Jesus. And Jesus asked him, "Do you love me?" And Peter said, "Yes, Lord, you know I do." Let us bow our heads in prayer.